When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Isabel Hauser, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. The spooky season is upon us, so in this episode, we are entering the realm of the darker stories. If you are listening in the presence of sensitive souls, such as children, you might want to skip to a lighter, more joyful episode, or put on headphones. When I was growing up, my family lived in a lovely, very old house. It was built in the 16th century as the home of the sacristan of the parish. Consequently, it was right next to the church and the graveyard. The church was moved a couple hundred meters away at the end of the 19th century, but the graveyard is still there to this day. Children see the world a lot differently than adults. And so for me, it was completely natural to view the graveyard as an extension of our garden, what with all the lawns and trees and bushes and flowers. I was a lot more afraid of the nightly creaking of timber in our house than of the flickering lights on the graves. And I considered the headstones pieces of art to be scrutinized and admired. I knew every winding path and spooky corner, and always walked the premises with due respect. It wasn't until much, much later, when I shared childhood memories with friends, that I realized this was not ordinary. Still, I hold those memories close to my heart, dusty old images in the treasure chest of my childhood. There was a tree I loved to climb and sit quiet as a mouse on a branch when people passed below, hidden from view by the foliage. From there, I had a view of the main steps of the graveyard, with a majestic white cedar tree on either side at the top. I loved those two trees and used to call them the guardians. Perched on that branch, I could also see two old pine trees on a lawn, stood so closely together that their branches touched, thus creating a protected space between them. I loved sitting there, my back against the trunk of one of those trees, just daydreaming or reading a book. This is what I had been doing one afternoon in late summer. Not long ago, the gardeners had finished replacing the colorful bouquets of flowers with chrysanthemum, aster, and wreaths of evergreen. The air was already so chilly that I was wearing a jumper, and dusk came a bit earlier every day. When I emerged from the pine enclosure to go home that afternoon, I was surprised and then delighted to see another child playing with pebbles between two rows of graves. It was a girl, probably about my age. She was wearing a pristine frock, the dark curls that tumbled down her back a stark contrast against its white fabric. I had never seen her before. She must be new to the neighborhood, I thought. She didn't seem to notice me, and I was just about to approach her when the church bells tolled. Time to go home. I turned around and left, hoping to see her again and find out who she was. For this episode, we only have one storyteller, Alton Chung. But what a storyteller he is! Alton is a Hawaiian-born storyteller and has been telling stories for a very long time. His unique way of bringing characters to life with his voice alone will leave you with a smile on your face and a chill in your heart. This is him telling A Promise Broken.
I'm not afraid to die, but there is one thing that troubles me. I wish I could know who will be taking my place in this house.
My love, no one shall take your place in my house. I shall never marry again.
Do you swear that? On your honor, as a samurai?
On my honor, as a samurai.
Ah. Then, my love, will you let me be buried in the garden, beneath the plum trees that we planted at the far end? Oh, I've been wanting to ask you this, but if you were to marry again, you might not like me to be buried so near you. But now that I know that you will not marry again, I would like to be buried in the garden, that I might sometimes hear your voice and be able to see the flowers in the spring.
Oh, it shall be as you wish, my darling, but do not speak of burials. Your condition is not so grave that we have given up all hope.
Ah, but I have. I shall die this morning. And will you give me a little bell?
A bell?
Yes. Place a little bell in my coffin. Just a little bell, such as the Buddhist pilgrims carry.
Oh, you shall have your little bell, I promise. And you shall be buried under the shade of the plum trees that you love so well. And I shall erect a beautiful monument for you.
Ah, now I can die happy.
And with that, the wife of the samurai closed her eyes and died as easily as a child falls asleep. She looked beautiful in death, with a little smile across her face. She was buried in the garden, under the shade of the trees that she loved, and a small bell was buried with her. Above the grave was erected a handsome monument decorated with the family crest. But within 12 months after the death of his wife, the relatives and the friends of the samurai began to insist that he marry again.
Oh, it is the duty of a samurai to marry. You are still a young man and an only child, and you have no children. If you die childless, who would make offerings and remember the ancestors?
Well, the samurai resisted. Had he not given his word to his dead wife? And yet, she was
dead.
And he was alive.
And did he not owe it to his ancestors to have children?
Well, at last he was persuaded to marry again. The bride was only 17 years old, a beautiful young girl. And the samurai found that he could love again. Nothing disturbed the happiness of the young wife until the seventh day after the wedding, when her husband was ordered to perform certain duties at the castle, which required him to be away from his young wife at night. When left alone for the first night, the young bride felt vaguely uneasy, and she could not sleep. There was a strange oppression in the air, an undefinable heaviness, like that which sometimes precedes great storms. About the hour of the ox, just after 1 in the morning, she heard... It was a Buddhist pilgrim's bell. But what pilgrim could be passing through the samurai quarter at this hour of the night? Now the bell sounded much nearer. The pilgrim was approaching the house, but why was he approaching from the rear of the house? There were no roads back there.
Then the dogs began to whine and growl in a most unusual and horrible way. Fear came upon her. The ringing was coming from the garden.
She tried to get up to wake a servant,
but she found she could not rise. She found she could not move. She found she could not make a sound. And nearer and nearer the bell came. How the dogs howled! And now into the room there came the odor of damp earth and the stench of rotting flesh. As she stared into the darkness, a shadow detached itself from the wall, and a form glided into the room. It was a woman wearing a shroud and carrying a pilgrim's bell.
Not in this house. Not in this house. I am still mistress here. You shall go and tell no one the reason for your going. And if you tell him, I will tear you apart.
The apparition drifted back into the shadows and vanished. The young bride lay terrorized all night long. But in the cheery light of day, she doubted the reality of what she had seen and heard. Yet the memory of the warning weighed heavily upon her. She did not tell a soul, she did not tell the servants, and certainly she did not tell her husband. That night, however, when her husband returned to the castle to perform his duties, she could doubt no more. Once again, at the hour of the ox, once again, the dogs began to howl and whine. Once again, she found she could not move. And once again, she found she could not utter a sound. And once again, there came the odor of damp earth and the stench of rotting flesh. Once again, the shadow detached itself from the wall, and the figure of a woman in a shroud glided forth from the shadows. Eyeless she came, for she had been long dead. Her hair streamed down across her face in long black strands. This time the apparition came right up to her bed and loomed over her. It looked at her without eyes and spoke without a tongue.
Not in this house. You must go and tell no one why you are leaving. And if you even whisper any of this to him, I will tear you apart.
And then the apparition withdrew back into the shadows and dematerialized.
The fairy tale sponsor for this episode is Casper's Rent-A-Ghost Spooking Agency. Is there someone you've been wanting to get back at for centuries? Are you throwing a party and want to regale your guests with an arresting surprise? Do you need a heart-stopping gift for an excitement-addicted friend or enemy? Look no further, for you'll find all your cold, dark heart desires at Casper's Rent-A-Ghost's booking agency. From a gasp to a full-blown heart attack, we'll make sure the giftees are all in for a spectacular experience they won't forget in their lifetime and beyond. From henchmen to whalers, star-crossed lovers and cruel barons, we've got every thrill and chill covered. You can book add-ons like long-lasting whisper willows, icy fog fumes or delayed encores. Packages also include various levels of insurance, up to and including reanimation of the giftee. If you sign over the first century of your afterlife to work with us, you'll get 3 spooking services for free. By working with Casper's Rent-A-Ghost Spooking Agency, you not only get what you want, but you also contribute to a good cause by providing employment for all the lost souls that would otherwise be aimlessly roaming the limbo. Also, parts of our proceedings go to Close the Book, a counseling service for all the ghosts who want to finish their unfinished business and cross to the other realm for good. Get spooking and rent your ghosts now. Casper's Rent-A-Ghost Spooking Agency. There's no business like spook business. Did you know that supporting the arts is the best protection against ghosts and gremlins? Oh yes, they love the arts and will leave anyone alone who is in support of them. So if you wish for only treats this Halloween season, doing as little as leaving a review of the podcast on Apple Podcasts will do the trick and keep you safe from unwanted otherworldly appearances and advances. If you want to be extra sure, you can also become a patron of the podcast on Patreon for as little as $4 a month. Not only will he keep you safe and sound, you'll also receive special goodies and our eternal gratitude. Head on over to Story Story Podcast to find out more. A few days passed. I was peering up into the branches of one of the guardian trees, craning my neck to spot the squirrel I thought I had just seen, when I suddenly sensed a presence. Indeed, when I turned around, there she was, pristine frock, wispy dark curls framing a pale face that instantly reminded me of an owl. "What are you doing?" she asked, her voice very quiet. I explained about the squirrel, and together we turned our heads to spot it. We didn't, but still, that was the beginning of a friendship. Bernadette, for that was her name, would be waiting every time by the guardian trees when I came to the graveyard to play, her small form almost comically minuscule against the majestic trunks of the trees. As the days grew shorter, it became our ritual to meet every day. She was a solemn child and unconditionally followed my lead, a rare delight for me, being the youngest of 2 strong-headed older sisters, and although she was rather quiet, I was happy enough to have found a friend in my neighborhood, someone who was different from the giggly girls in my class. The weather turned colder, the days shorter still, and my breath began to form small clouds in the chill air as we whispered secrets, dreams, and plans to each other, huddled together in the small enclosure between the pine trees. I kept inviting Bernadette to the comfort and warmth of my home, but she never wanted to come. So I kept on going back to the graveyard, day after day, sometimes bringing snacks my mom had prepared. Apples with raisins, crackers, the rare piece of chocolate, a flask of hot tea. Bernadette never ate much, but nibbled on everything with what I would describe as wide-eyed curiosity, never getting a single crumb on her ever-pristine white frock. She, however, never brought anything at all and, for that matter, never invited me to her house either. I didn't even know where she lived. And as the days passed, my curiosity grew. "I'm hungry," I ventured one day. "Can we have a snack at your place?" She hesitated. "Oh, come on," I pressed on. "I have shared all my snacks with you all this time. Don't you think it's time you shared yours with me?" Bernadette hesitated still, silently gazing at me with her owlish eyes. "Bernadette, I want to go to your house," I demanded, with a voice as commanding as a child's can be. She opened her mouth, then closed it again. And when at last she spoke, her voice was but a whisper. "If I do, things won't be the same anymore." I didn't understand what she meant, but I didn't care either. I just wanted my hunger and curiosity satisfied. "Can we go?" I asked, making it sound not as a question, but a marching order. Bernadette cast down her eyes and turned around. A chill ran down my spine. Mist was coming down from the mountain and darkness would come soon. Soon I would have to go home, but I didn't want to miss the chance to find out about my friend's home now. So I followed her, and as a gesture of our friendship, feeling a bit sorry already for my insistence, and also to feel safe, I took her hand. It was very cold. She led me through the cemetery, past the rows of family graves and past the gate that would have led us out of the graveyard and into the neighborhood, where all the nice houses with their warm, illuminated windows were. I had always pictured her in one of those detached houses with a large garden and maybe even a pond, so I was confused, but I kept on walking, trying to match her pace. Bernadette's grip on my hand was firm and icy. Deeper and deeper into the silent graveyard she led me, past the graves of centuries past, graves no one looked after anymore, lone mossy headstones in the shadows of trees as old as time. And when at last Bernadette stopped, I silently gasped. I knew where we were, and I didn't want to be there, but her hand tightened even more around mine. I couldn't move. Bernadette turned towards me, her face ghostly pale, a smile playing around her lips. "We're home," she said. We were standing outside a crypt. The door was ajar. I heard a sound and things were never the same again. And now the second half of Alton Chung telling A Promise Broken.
The next morning, as Amaterasu, the compassionate goddess of the sun, was just peeking over the eastern hills, the samurai returned from the castle.
"Husband, husband, pardon my ingratitude, but I want to go home. I must go away, and I must go now."
"Why? Are you unhappy here? Has someone been unkind to you during my absence?"
"No, no, nothing like that. Everyone has been very kind to me, but I cannot continue to be your wife, and I must go away."
"Surely you do not mean that you wish a divorce?"
"If you do not give me a divorce, I shall die."
"Ah. To send you back now to your people without any fault on your part would be shameful. No, the honor of my house must be preserved. You must give me a reason, otherwise I will not grant you a divorce."
And feeling obliged to speak, she told him everything.
And now that I have told you, she will kill me.
Nonsense, my darling, nonsense. I fear that someone has been filling your head with foolish stories. I cannot grant you a divorce just because you are having bad dreams in my house. No, tonight I must return to the castle, but I will order two of my best retainers to keep watch in your room that you may get a good night's sleep.
Well, the two retainers were big, brave, simple-hearted men who were experienced guardians of women and children. They told the bride pleasant stories to keep her cheerful, and she laughed at their good humor and almost forgot her own fears. At last, she lay down to sleep, and the men-at-arms took their place in a corner of the room behind a screen, where they set up a board and began to play a game of Go with black and white stones. The young bride then fell asleep.
She awoke with a start. It was already the hour of the ox. She heard the bell, and it was near.
And coming nearer.
She screamed! But in the room, there was no stir. It was silent. Silent, like death. A heavy, dripping silence.
She rushed out of bed to the men-at-arms. They squatted before their board, motionless, each staring into the eyes of the other.
Oh, she shrieked at them.
They did not move.
She shook them,
but they remained frozen. Afterwards, they would say that they heard the bell and the cry of the bride. They even felt her trying to rouse them, but that they could neither move nor speak. And from that moment on, darkness descended upon them, and they fell asleep. Entering the bedroom at dawn, the samurai beheld, by the light of a dying lamp, the headless body of his young wife, lying in a pool of blood.
Well, he screamed,
and he rushed to his retainers. They were still squatting before their game asleep.
He shook them, and they sprung up,
and they stared dumbly at the horror on the floor. The head was nowhere to be seen. Looking at the hideous wound, the samurai could see that it had not been cut off, but rather that it had been torn off. A trail of blood led from the chamber to the outer gallery, where the doors had been torn off their hinges. The three men followed the trail into the garden, through the grass, over the sand, along the banks of an iris-bordered pond, and under the heavy shadowings of cedar, bamboo, and plum trees. Suddenly they turned a corner and found themselves face to face with the nightmare thing. It stood erect before its tomb, chittering at them like a bat. It was the figure of a long-dead woman dressed in a burial shroud. It stared at them with eyeless eyes, and its hair hung down across its face in long black strands. And the air was filled with the odor of damp earth and the stench of rotting flesh. In its left hand, it clutched a little bell. And in its right, it held the still dripping head. For a moment, they all stood frozen, staring at one another. And then the samurai drew his katana, his long sword, his killing sword, and uttering a prayer, Namu Amida Butsu! Namu Amida Butsu! He struck at the shape. Instantly it crumbled to the ground, a scattering of grave rags, bones, and hair. The bell came rolling out from under the crumpled mass. But the fleshless right hand, although severed from the wrist, still grasped the dripping head.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story podcast. Show the love. Find Elton Chung at eltonchung.com. Tell him you heard him on the podcast and now want to hear him tell more stories. We are in strange times for performing artists, but art is needed more than ever. So many stories are doing online events, especially at this time of year. So you, yes, you, can hear some of your favorite storytellers of the podcast tell stories from the comfort of your home. These may be different times, but the opportunities to connect with the magic of live storytelling are abundant, and this dark, cold season is perfect to enjoy the art of storytelling from the warmth of your home. You can connect with the podcast on Facebook or Instagram at Story Story Podcast or Rachel Ann at Rachel Ann Harding. You can find me at isabelhauser.com. On the podcast social media, you can also see the lovely fairy tale sponsor ads that you can hear on Story Story Podcast. While you're there, let me know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you will hear them here soon. The lovely music on the podcast is by Poddington Bear. The inspiration for the fairy tale sponsor was a synchronicity between Rachel Ann and me. The true fairy tale is an actual memory of my childhood. Well, parts of it at least. And when you check out our social media, you can see a picture of the guardian trees. This podcast is made possible by patrons like you. Consider becoming a patron, joining the mailing list to get podcast goodies, or writing a review on Apple Podcasts, which helps other story lovers find and enjoy the show. You'll hear more stories next week. But until then, live happily ever after.
Mary Kate opened up the door, and there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music